Hello, everyone. My name is Hannah. I'm a compulsive overeater. I was sitting here thinking before I started, I was like, I've not planned anything. I've not planned at all. I've done a few chairs in my time in OA. And the very first ones I did, I used to plan quite strictly. I had notes and I was very panicked and I was very worried about it. And actually, I think that is actually one of the gifts of recovery now is that, I show up and I share my experience, strength, and hope. I have one story, and it's my story, and that's all I've got. And that's all I can share. And actually, I know my story relatively well now. So I'll try and share a bit about what life was like before OA, what life was like working the steps for the first time, and what life is like now in recovery. I don't know when I became a compulsive overeater. I just know that it's kind of always been there. I don't know if people are born with it. I don't know if there's a compulsive overeater gene. I don't know if it's genetic. I don't know. And to be honest, for me, it doesn't matter. What I do know is that the day I was born, there are photos of me when the very first pictures of me are me sucking my fingers. I sucked my middle finger and ring finger. The first thing I did in this world was soothe myself orally. And I was a kid that used to have dummies or pacifiers, but I also sucked my thumb up until I was like 7 or 8, to the point where it caused dental problems. I have permanently sought to soothe myself via my mouth. And as soon as I stopped sucking my thumb, I think that was actually when some of the food problems really started. I was a chubby kid. I was an overweight teenager who then became, quite frankly, an obese and morbidly obese adult. I do come from a family of compulsive overeaters. I actually know about OA because my mum went to OA when I was a teenager. She did not stay in OA, but I do know. That's how I know about it. And actually, in recovery, I look at other branches of my family tree and recognize just how many problems there might be in other areas as well. I am the only one who I would say that's in my family that's in recovery, which is actually a very active and live problem for me at the moment. But for a long time, I believed I had a weight problem. I did not realize I had a food problem. I definitely saw them as separate things. And I really believe that I always say that my life was like, I thought it was like dominoes, that my life was like all stacked up like dominoes. And the first one was losing weight. If I knock that one down, then I'd be happy, then I'd be healthy, then I'd find the man of my dreams, then I'd somehow get rich, then I'd somehow be everything else would just all fall into place. And it took me a really long time to realize that it wasn't a weight problem. And I think that's because for me, denial is such a huge part of my illness. And for me, denial and fantasy absolutely go hand in hand. Like, I spent most of my life in a daydream fantasy, imagining I was somewhere else with someone else, doing something else. So that was just so much more comfortable than living the life that I was actually living. I'd just much rather pretend I was somewhere else. And the discomfort of being me and being in a much larger body. When I came into OA, I was 180 kilos, which is about 400 pounds. And I got to that size not realizing it was a food issue. And as the big book explains, this is a progressive illness. I'm very clear that I ate once upon a time because it worked. It numbed me out and it helped me get through. It did what it needed to do. The problem is that the cost of that, just increased every single time. Every single binge, the cost on my mental, physical, and spiritual health just got that little bit higher. And the effectiveness of numbing me out shrunk just that little bit every time. And then at some point, they overtook each other. And I was binging with next to no benefit and a huge amount of cost every time. But by that point, I was way too far gone. I spent a long time umming and ahhing about whether to go into OA. Once I realized it was a food problem rather than a weight problem, even then, I still chose denial for a little bit longer. I wasn't someone that did like a lot of
15
pay and
minutes.
weigh. Thank you. I wasn't someone that did a lot of pay and weigh diet clubs or anything like that. That would have to prove that I had a problem. I didn't have a problem. I was just fat. So, I wasn't someone who went down that road. But I think there were a handful of situations with food where it was just so crazy that it was kind of undeniable now. I remember going to a nearby, I don't know what the rules is around naming food, so I'll avoid it, but there was a nearby place here, a takeaway. And I was waiting for my food, for my binge food, an inordinate amount of food, enough to feed four or five people easily. And I started stealing food off a stranger's plate that they'd left discarded in the restaurant. It just, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? What am I doing? This makes absolutely no sense. And then they called me to say that my food was ready. And this like horror of, did someone just see me? Did someone just see that? And the utter disgust I felt in myself eating whole food off a stranger's plate that had been disregarded on a table. And then knowing that I was just about to take all this food and walk home and eat the whole thing anyway. Like, what was I doing? And it was that insanity and the shame. In the end, it was the shame that brought me into OA. So I came in July 2018, and I did everything other than get a sponsor. I went to all the meetings, I did the calls, I went to a Region 9 conference, I went on a weekend retreat. I did everything other than get a sponsor because I know myself well enough to know that once I get a sponsor, I'm gonna actually have to do some work, aren't I? I'm gonna actually have to do it. And there is still a debate between me and my sponsor as to who approached who. I maintain she approached me. I maintain she 12-stepped me. He does not say it that way. So we'll have to agree to disagree on that one. But I started working with a sponsor in the kind of November time. My absence date is the 12th of the 12th, 12 and 12, the 12th of December, 2018. And I've maintained my absence since then. I have worked with the same sponsor the entire time. And I have lost pretty much half my body weight. I am now, I've lost about 200 pounds. And working the steps is easily, without a doubt, the hardest thing I've ever done. It is also the best thing I've ever done. I work with sponsees now, and actually, the more I work with sponsees, the more I realize that my story is not necessarily usual. To kind of work with one sponsor, get it, and kind of have that spiritual experience relatively quickly. It is hard. This program is really hard. It is simple, but not easy, but it is so worth it. And the recovery, what my life looks like now, is genuinely unrecognizable. And the best line for me, or the best line, that's my favorite line, if I'm allowed to have favorite lines from the big book, where is it talks about how his roots graft new soil. And that really does feel to me the best definition of recovery. It's like I am still me, but my roots feed into something fundamentally different. What sustains me, what nourishes me, how I navigate the world, what the eyes I look out with are just different now. And it has reprogrammed my thinking. I have a level of neutrality around food and my body that I never thought possible. Ironically, I've had nothing but health problems in recovery. And loads of people outside of OA are like, you've lost all that weight. You must feel so much better and so much healthier. It's like, aha, no, I've actually never been sicker. But what I do have is I have the tools and the ability to navigate living life in a sicker body now, and what that means, and showing up and going to my doctor's appointments, going to my dentist appointments, and looking after myself. So yeah, in terms of working the steps, I would say for every single step I was on, I was terrified of the step coming next, okay. Which is probably not the best way of working them. Probably best to sort of focus on the step I'm in. But there were a couple I was really terrified of that I think probably worth talking about. I was really terrified of
Acknowledged.
step three. Thank you, acknowledged. I was really terrified of step three. I was expecting it to be this like really fundamental shift. Like I was expecting clouds parting. Like in the UK, there was a TV show, sorry, an advert in like the 90s for the National Lottery, and you had this big hand that would emerge out of the clouds. And that was kind of what I was expecting. I was expecting this huge moment, and that if I didn't have it, I was failing away. That I like, and I was had these real expectations that something profound was going to happen. And I did my step three, and nothing profound happened. I was so disappointed. And actually, then it was afterwards my sponsor said, okay, well, from now on, I want you to do a step three prayer every morning. And it was like, and I was a bit sort of confused, like, well, I've done step three now. What's the, I don't really get it. And she said, well, no, step three is a process. And it was like, oh, okay, that makes a bit more sense now. And that idea that I need to continuously hand my day and my will over to the power of God, because my natural instinct is still, and I'm an addict, I will want to find the easier, softer way, always. And I therefore need to continuously, over and over again, continue to turn to God. And step three is not a moment in time, it is a commitment and a daily process. And that felt so much more sense. And so it wasn't this big ah-ha-ha moment. It's promise and a commitment. And actually, just like when I make a commitment in any relationship, the commitment I make to God and the relationship I have with God gets stronger the more I do it, the more I commit to it, the longer I'm in recovery. So yeah, no big aha moment, but instead a much stronger, more foundational relationship with my higher power. But the other step I was terrified of was step nine. I didn't really know much about 12-step programs before I came in. I just kind of knew that you all sat in a circle, said that you're an addict, and then at some point you went and apologized to people. And that's kind of all I knew. And the idea that I was going to have to go and apologize to anyone for anything that I did was horrifying. And what I can say is that for me, the promises came true in step nine. That's where it was. That's where things clicked in. And each and every amend that I did was incredible, genuinely incredible. Even like the ones that I was most afraid of, the ones that I left to the end that I put off, ended up being like the least eventful ones, which I think in itself was incredible. The ones I'd hyped up and feared the most, which were going to two of my previous bosses. I was like, oh my God, they're gonna like, they're never gonna give me a good reference ever again. I'm gonna lose my job. Like, no, there was nothing. It was fine. But I did do a never amends. And I know everyone does these differently, but for me, a never amends is when if there is a person in my life where I do owe them an amends, but it would be harmful to them or somebody else for me to make that amends, then I don't make it directly to them. I make it to God instead, and I do it that way. And I did a never amends to my grandfather. And my grandfather was a very sick man. And we kind of agreed with my sponsor that it wouldn't be right for me to do an amends directly to him. I don't think he would have been able to kind of comprehend or really understand what was going on. And yeah. So anyway, I went, my granddad was in the Navy. And so I went to this like National Maritime Museum in London with all these like ships, and I kind of just really connected with God, and I took a moment, I found myself in this like exhibition there, and it was about World War II. And my grandfather was an evacuee in World War II. He was evacuated out of London as a child. And I was there looking at all these children, these pictures of children. And I was like, okay, my power presents this to me. And I felt such calmness and such overwhelming gratitude for my grandfather. And I'd never had a positive emotion towards him ever. And I just Every bit of resentment I had towards him, which was years of holding on to, all of it just left. And I just burst into tears. And
5 minutes.
thank you, acknowledged. I'm also a big believer that tears for me are my higher power. I went to my very first OA meeting and I couldn't open my mouth. I just sat and cried. And I now know that was my higher power going, yes, this here, this thread, keep pulling this. That feeling of, I don't know what's going on. I just know I'm supposed to be here and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. That to me is God, 100%. Just trusting that and to have that kind of feeling bubbling up that I can't put a word on or explain or anything like that, that is God. And so yeah, so I just felt this real release of every resentment I ever had and a real humility, and I apologized for my part in what I'd done to him. And then years later, my granddad was really sick and he was dying. And I went and I was there. I was present while he was in his final days, and I was able to be there and support my family, support my nan, support my mom. And I remember the very last conversation I had with him. I went there and there's a big group of us. And all of a sudden my granddad reached out. And by this point, our relationship had really repaired after I'd done that step nine. He didn't know I was in OA. But he reached out and he grabbed my hand. And I sort of looked at him and he just went, I'm sorry. And I said, for what? And he said, I don't know yet. And I didn't realize it at the time. I sort of laughed. I went, oh, you're putting one in the bank for later. And he just sort of smiled at me and we all carried on. And I left later and I was like, oh my gosh, I got my step nine back. I got it back. It took me years. It was years later, but I got it back. And that was the last conversation I had with him, and he passed away. And I actually have his watch that I was given. My nan gave me his watch and I wear it every day. And it is for me a symbol of the time I lost to this illness, what this illness took from me, but it is also a sign of what I can get given back if I keep working my program. And to me, this program isn't necessarily loud and big and boisterous and all singing, all guns blazing. It sometimes it's just quiet. Sometimes it's just being there for my family and being of service. And sometimes it's me shutting up. It's me not sharing my opinions. It's me just practicing these principles in all my affairs. And I'm aware I'm low on time. I always talk far too much in these, but what I would say is that for me now, what recovery looks like is just showing up one day at a time. And I live a life that's quite simple. It's not, funnily enough, those dominoes didn't all happen. I didn't lose the weight, then suddenly become mega rich, then find the man of my dreams, and then annoyingly that hasn't happened. Never mind. But I can show up for life, and I have the physical, emotional, and spiritual recovery. I think one of the things I would say though is that I am still a compulsive overeater. And I do wake up every morning and remind myself of that, because when times are tough at the moment, I have to keep working this program. And I think that has been one of the habits that my sponsor has kind of really instilled in me from the very beginning, is that idea of like leaning in, because my instinct is always to lean back. I want to run away. I want to hide. I want to isolate. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to give service. I don't want to do any of that. I want to lock myself in my room and not talk to anyone. And if I could have worked this program on my own, oh my God, I would have 100% have worked this on my own. I would never speak to anyone if I could. But I can't do that. I have to lean in, and I have to lean towards God, towards, and I have to lean into the discomfort. And it was painful learning how to do that. And it's still not my first instinct, because my first instinct is always to run away and hide and find the easier, softer way. But the more I do it, the easier it becomes. And now I just can't imagine a life without this program. It sustains me. It is the soil that feeds me. And I have a neutrality around food that I didn't think was possible. Thank you, acknowledged. And so I just say to anyone who's new, to anyone who is struggling, to just lean in. And it's scary. And I often felt like I was falling a lot of the time. But this program, your higher power and the fellows in it are big enough to catch you. So yeah, I will leave it there. Thanks, everyone.